Please pray with me. I apologize for my cheat sheet. Oh, Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved
Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother, Beloved David, I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual well-being.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual well-being.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace,
bliss,
Amen. From David's blog. It's interesting because these don't correspond with the day that we're in. So this is Easter Sunday. Today we celebrate Resurrection Day, the day that Lord Jesus made his physical body come to radiant life after being horribly crucified. Since then, there's been much said and written about the resurrection of believers upon the second coming of the Christ. However, why should so much be made of resurrecting the body alone? Is the assumption that all believers should have also gone through an inner transformation when them bones rise again? The word resurrection has interesting Latin roots. It comes from the verb rego, to make straight, plus the preposition of sub or under, then serectum, to rise. Put together, a straightening from under again. So taking the root meanings, to take what is under, make it straight and arise. This instruction can be perfectly applied to sadhana, spiritual practice. To take what is under the lower impulses of the ego mind, which we're very good at doing. But then we have to make it straight through God remembrance, then for consciousness to rise into spiritual union with our Heavenly Father. Rather than focusing on the body alone as resurrected, this way of understanding the word entails the transformation of the inner person, the whole man. Jesus, the Son of Man, becomes Jesus anointed, the Son of God. And in his wake, we, who he commanded, are to follow into his footsteps. For the Master said, "And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." Celebrating resurrection this time of year, this spring equinox, is wonderfully symbolic of the arisen consciousness. Locally, the daffodils are bursting into bloom like so many rays of golden sun. Life is returning after slumbering in winter. Seeds burst their bonds and branches reach out for the light. New life, new hope, a renewed world. As we meditate upon this miracle of nature, let us know that an even greater miracle is promised within, the resurrection of divine consciousness, that we may know the Heavenly Father in truth and reality. So let us pick up our cross, the body, and follow after our Lord to meditate deeply upon that inner light that is seeking to draw us unto itself. The story is not a fairy tale, nor is it an event that took place 2,000 years ago. But this is a living legacy from all those who have gone before us into the resurrected divine consciousness, and is seeking to do so now in you. Blessings to you, my dear ones, on this resurrection day, a blessed day for the new life in Christ consciousness.
So I'd like us to take that reading to start with into meditation. And instead of having music, I'm going to lead you through the heart center clearing breath, which David taught and Babaji gave to him in his time in Cloud Mountain. And those who were here Wednesday night on service will remember that we did this. I'm going to start by reading from the journal, from Peony's nice description of diaphragmatic breathing. Diaphragmatic breathing can be practiced in any bodily position. However, a position that is easy to access, well, we won't do that, sorry. So, place your hands on the belly. And as you breathe in, make sure that the belly is expanding. And as you breathe out, allow the belly to contract. Try not to alter your breathing, the length or the depth, but simply make sure that the belly is expanding as you breathe in and contracting as you breathe out. We're breathing with the sheet of muscles that are the diaphragm. And David came to refer to this as the clearing breath. So we're not changing the breath at all, the length or the depth of it, but simply making sure that as we breathe in, the diaphragm expands, and as we breathe out, it contracts. Let's do that 5 or 6 more times. One thing that if it's difficult for you to focus on your breathing this way, I've found if you imagine snoring, it's a funny thing to think about, but it's a way we mimic the consciousness of the breath. So if you think about the sound of snoring and what that really means. Now I want you to bring your consciousness to the center of your chest, the heart center. If you imagine when you put your hand, if you think about who am I, we put our hand in a certain place in our chest. Behind that is the heart center. The middle, maybe a little bit in the front of the middle of the body. You imagine squeezing your shoulder blades together. That gives you another spatial place. You'll notice that there's a warmth there. There may be some movement, circular movement in that center. And once you've located that space, I want you to again think about the diaphragmatic breathing, clearing breath, the expansion of the stomach as you breathe in, contraction as you breathe out. And then invite the heart center to do the same thing. As you breathe in, it expands. And as you breathe out, it contracts. The space may feel loose and easy to move, or as was the case for me for many years, it felt like a tight Gordian knot. And as I tried to move it, it would just tighten and not want to expand. It was keeping itself safe, keeping itself contracted. When in reality, it was blocking all the joy, all the love, all the God that could be flowing through me. And so this practice starts to tease that center into opening. So if you notice that it feels tight and constricted, just imagine it very gently, very minutely softening and loosening. Focus on that space, and it's, you can think of it as a sphere. Conscious of the edges of it, and that it slightly or greatly expands and contracts with each breath. Energy may flow differently once you do this. Just allow that to move through as it wants to. It may flow through the throat center to the medulla and across to the ajna. It may stay very focused and very difficult to move. So just be where you are with it. No judgment. It is exactly where it is. And just breathe with that for about a minute. The heart center is the first place that it's the beginning of the higher centers. And it's where the horizontal and vertical meet. So the place where the realized soul can work in the world. It's an essential piece for us to be able to take whatever level of consciousness we're at and still be able to function in the world. So when we're feeling very elevated in our meditation and don't want to give that up as we move into the world, we bring that energy to the heart center and let it flow through there instead of the higher centers. We're able to function successfully in the world and retain that connection to God. It's a very useful center to be aware of. It's also the center that many of us get stuck because of the heartaches that we've gone through in our lives. And I say lives, not just life. It's a place where the breakthroughs begin on this path to higher consciousness. And it can take many years for it to open fully. So don't judge yourself if you could barely budget. Just becoming aware of the blockages, the beginning of the opening. Any comments or questions about that? With open heart centers. See what David has to talk to us about today. So this reading is from the Cross and Lotus Journal, and it's The Battlefield of Life. David gave this talk in Seattle September 10th, 2006. God talks to Arjuna. From the moment of conception to the surrender of the last breath, man has to fight in each incarnation innumerable battles, biological, hereditary, bacteriological, physiological, climactic, social, ethical, political, sociological, psychological, metaphysical, so many varieties of inner and outer conflicts, competing for the victory in every encounter are the forces of good and evil. I'm just going to stop there for a second and think about how significant that statement is right now. This is Arjuna, this is Krishna talking to Arjuna 2,000, 5,000 years ago. And we're facing all these exact same battles right now. Competing for victory in every encounter are the forces of good and evil. The whole intent of the Gita is to align man's efforts to the side of Dharma or righteousness. The ultimate aim is self-realization, the realization of man's true self. The soul is made in the image of God, one with the ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss of spirit. So that's from Master's interpretation of the Gita. What God showed me at one point was that as the soul comes into that body, not only is it an inheritor of certain genetic gifts, be they for good or ill, but also the consciousness of that soul begins to activate or deactivate certain genetic switches that will bring that body into conformance with the soul that is coming into it. So there is an interactive aspect to that soul coming into birth consciousness. And as Master said in this writing, that in the beginning, the soul remembers its freedom. It remembers what it was in the astral form. It remembers the good things. It remembers the light. But it's also aware that it's entering the material body. Now, the material body feels like a heavy overcoat compared to the astral body. And as we know, babies within the womb and babies just born spend a great deal of time sleeping. And in that sleeping time, they're remaining established in their astral form. as they gradually grow accustomed to being in a physical form. So I'll put a question to you right now, which is, what do you remember of that astral existence? What have you carried through to this point?
Nothing.
That's what I was going to say.
I don't know. There's kind of a glow. Yeah. It just feels like a glow of just life force energy, for lack of a better word.
Anybody else?
The light meditation be the astral.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of.
That lightness that you experience in meditation?
Yeah, just opening up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about when like life enters the physical, it's like all the cells in the body are aligned the way that, that's what that made me think of, like it's all the cells of the body aligned to the spiritual vibration that's entered it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah. And is that from a intellectual view or memory?
I don't know if it's memory. It's like I can feel it in myself, but yeah. I can't remember it. It's
yeah.
like, but that's a type of remembering.
It
it's
is,
like when
yeah.
you wake up from dreams sometimes, and you can't quite remember the dream, but you're feeling the dream, you're
yes.
still wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that sort of feeling.
And I think that's the essential thing to think about, is that it's beyond mind, so it's not an intellectual memory. It's a sense memory. It's a sense of self.
It's like an antenna memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, electrical.
Yeah.
I would challenge the people who say they don't have the memory. One thing that's come to me is our sense of the wrongness of things. Things shouldn't be like this. People shouldn't be cruel. People shouldn't do certain things. I think that comes from our memory of the astral, where things were so much more peaceful, so much more aligned. That's where we get that sense of right and wrong from. And that we're taught that in the astral, the idea of heaven and hell is there because we're with like-minded souls. And so if what we see as righteous is peace and love and art and music and beauty, that's our astral home. And for people who like to fight and war and punch and kick, they're surrounded by people who enjoy that as well, which to us certainly looks like hell. And so that's, astrally, that's, we're stratified. The idea is that there is a higher and a lower, and the higher can go down into the lower can't come above where they are. And so when we have that feeling that things shouldn't be like this, this isn't right, that's memories of that peaceful astral existence.
But then what does that say about the absence of it when you observe Netanyahu comes to mind right now?
So
when
you can imagine
complete absence of that ethical vibration you're talking about from the astral plane,
yeah.
right? I mean,
so you can imagine which stratification he would be at.
Well, you're talking about a very low,
yeah.
low vibration level.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when dominance is important, that people are seeking dominance, power, that's where they feel safe. The only time they can feel safe is if they're completely dominant. Whereas those on the spiritual path seem to feel safest when they're surrounded by like-minded souls. And so it's a very different, you know, we're all looking for safety, we're all looking for happiness, we're all looking for peace. And people who are in that consciousness, that's where they think they'll find it. They live this life and figure, and at the end they realize, I never felt safe. And so hopefully they learn from that and evolve from that. But in the meantime, they think more power, more dominance will make me feel safer. And, you know, you just wrap your arms around them like the little children that they are and try and help them feel safe.
That's interesting to me because right now in my life, I don't feel safe in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And it's a very concrete feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't feel safe with certain people.
Yeah. And David would challenge us to open that heart center in any situation. And then the other piece that we do is we open the medulla and the back of the spine and allow that energy to flow in and through us. And that's where our true safety comes from. And we can do a little exercise. Is everybody hearing okay? We have a whole group that's talking. Are you guys able to hear us? Yeah. John says yes.
Yes.
John's on here. Dirk. Yeah.
Yep.
Hi, John.
Hello, John.
Hi, everybody. So we're going to do the medulla opening exercise. And again, we did this Wednesday for those who were here and at the retreat. So it's very simple. It's the 20-part energization except for with a little bit different direction. So I'm going to walk you through it slowly one time, and then we'll do it kind of for real the second time. So we're going to tense just to a low tension each of the 20 body parts. And so we're going to start with the left foot and just tense it lightly. The right foot, tense it lightly. Left calf, tense it lightly. Right calf. And continue to hold. Sorry, I forgot that part. Each body part. Left thigh. Right thigh. Left forearm. Right forearm. Left upper arm. Right upper arm. Lower abdomen. Upper abdomen. Left chest, right chest, left neck, right neck, front of the neck. Hold for the count of 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Release, exhale, and feel the energy flowing in through the medulla and up and down the back of the spine. And we'll do it one more time. I'll talk less this time. But just remember, as you let go of the tension, throw out the breath at the same time. So left foot, right foot, left calf, right thigh, left lower arm, right lower arm, left upper arm, right upper arm, lower abdomen, stomach, left chest, right neck, front of the neck, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, release. And feel the energy flowing in. And this time, as you feel the energy flowing in, also notice the heart center. And allow the energy to flow through the heart center. And again, you can just use your imagination. Imagine it flowing. Feel that river of love and light of God that flows through. It may feel like a tingling energy. You may see it as light. It may be very subtle, but just be aware of it. Notice how the body reacts. I'd like you to imagine a situation while that energy is flowing through. Imagine a situation where you might feel afraid or uncomfortable. Might be a specific person. That might be the easiest way to think about it. And notice what happens. Do you feel that contracting? And if you do, go through. Do the body part. And you can actually just do all of them at once in a quicker way. Hold for 10 seconds. Release. And it will reopen that. That channel. And then imagine again the person standing in front of you. Notice the body. Any questions or comments about that? Able to allow that flow to come even with that discomforting person? Yeah.
I think that exercise could be really useful for people that have anxiety and panic attacks.
Yeah. Because it connects us to the infinite. Mm-hmm. And it's so simple. I've been trying to have work on these practices kind of each class so that people get in the habit of putting them to practice. Because it's free, it's there, and it allows us to be connected so easily. And it's, did you notice a difference?
I noticed that I was resisting it quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because I am that person who has anxiety attacks.
Yeah.
And so my anxiety gets in the way.
Yeah.
And I use that as an excuse sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's still those things.
It serves us in some way.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not real or it's a physical experience that the body's having. Mm-hmm. And the body puts us into that situation because it thinks it's protecting us. Mm-hmm. The ego keeps us there because it thinks it's protecting us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we practice these things and help the ego learn that, wait, God is a better protector. Mm-hmm. God has a better idea of what's going on.
Right.
And if we open ourselves like that to that flow, and there's something we need to get away from, God will show us really quickly. And it may not be the things that the ego would protect us from. And so we have access to so much more that way. Yeah. But we have to practice these things so that we remember them when we need them. That's the big thing is, I remember we were in Costa Rica and we had our three of our kids with us that were teenagers and we were robbed at gunpoint. And I went into warrior mode, and Greg went into compliant mode. One of our daughters dropped to her knees, like, because it had been like in movies when people have a gun, they have you on your knees, and somehow that was what she did. My son got really defiant, and our youngest daughter said, well, I started praying. And I thought, well, wasn't that smart? The 10-year-old, you know. her immediate thing was to start praying. And that, so it's, it really, when we're faced with these situations, it's what we've practiced. And so that's, it's interesting how we all, we fall into these things, you know, make the practice of going to God for our, strength. And so that's what I'm about. Yeah, well, we did. I mean,
this picture of you.
Yeah, well, they did. They robbed us and yelled at us. Didn't fire or anything. But we had done all the things you're supposed to do. Where we had our decoy money, and then all of our important stuff was in belts underneath our clothes. So we gave them the things that they could see. And then they took it and ran, and we ran up to the place we were staying, and it was, you know, after the adrenaline subsided, we talked to the kids about it, and they said, we asked them after the trip and said, you know, if you knew everything was going to happen that happened on this trip, would you still go? And he said, in a minute. It was worth it. It was so amazing. And nobody actually got hurt. And we got back the kids' Game Boy that they had taken later on. And we moved to a different part of Costa Rica so that we didn't have to be in the same area that that had happened. But it was an interesting thing. It was...
They
felt, yeah.
Kids all got to tell their friends.
Yeah.
Nothing really bad happens. It's an adventure.
Yes, it was part of the adventure. And
so was this in a big city, I'm assuming?
No, this was in a small place. Okay. Yeah, that was, it was, and we were foolish. We, you know, were going back after dark and things like that. So we could have, yeah. It was such a, it felt like such a safe little place that, but we were right at the Nicaraguan border, and it was during a time there was a lot of poverty, and so people were coming over and getting the tourists, because that's how they felt safe, was to get more money, right? That was their way for safety. So it's an interesting, it really puts us, you know, these situations really put our faith to the test and our practice, you know, to not have that be the first thing that popped in my head, but to become the warrior that I've been so many lifetimes was what immediately came to mind. I have to defend my family.
So how about the?
I was out in front. Everybody was back here. I was out in front of the guys, like drawing, like what you would call drawing the fire, you know. Hey, you know, getting there, distracting them from the kids, and strange things.
Mm-hmm. The best experience I had was when I got kidnapped in Mexico, and for some reason my whole consciousness was higher than usual.
Yeah,
and I knew exactly what I was going to do. In the few seconds that all happened, and it was so magical that afterwards I felt that it was a really amazing experience. You know,
because you went into,
I went God into that contact. Zone where I was completely in charge of everything, and I knew that I was going to fall out of the car, rolling myself out of the car, and I knew that I needed to go close to the edge of the car. I wasn't sure if he was going to do something, but then when he started, I rolled myself out of the car. Mm-hmm. Never got injured. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I have very little fear of some situation because I feel like I'm protected or something sort of props out of me and protects me. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not you at that time. You know, it has nothing to do with
you. Well, it's the higher you. Yeah. It's the realized soul.
But didn't come back and try and get you?
Huh?
Oh,
no, I screamed. I screamed and he just took off.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah, with everything. So all my luggage and all my stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah, everything. He asked us to put all our things in the back of the car. And so all our money, everything. Oh. We were just waiting to for the bus in the morning to go to Canada.
Oh, so did more than one of you jump out of the car?
Well, no, what happened is, it's a long story,
oh, okay.
But I was with my boyfriend.
Because you said we, that's right.
Yeah. He had it all set up.
Right?
And so he asked my boyfriend to drive because he said that he had trouble driving at night. So while Gilbert got out of the car.
That's when he, I see.
But what I noticed is that he wasn't moving. She let him sit in the driver's seat. And it was just like a real protection happened there because, you know, everything was heightened and all of a sudden, you know, I knew that he wasn't moving. I would get ready. Yeah. I'm not closing that door. I'm ready. You know?
Yeah.
But it's really nice to know that you have that.
Angel Gabriel was.
Yes. Okay, back to David's. Now, the material body feels like a heavy overcoat compared to the astral body. And as we know, babies within the womb and babies just born spend a great deal of time sleeping. And in that sleeping time, they're remaining established in their astral form as they gradually grow accustomed to being in physical form. If that's so, why it's so hard to wake up some days. I don't want to go back into this. We can possess a mixed nature. It's an interesting thing what tendencies, what are called samskaras, you bring into this world with you. In my own case, I had a very martial view of the world as a child. I used to think, and of course, many children play with army toys and guns and things. And of course, that was very much part of my upbringing. But when we would go on trips and we would travel in the car, I'd look out the window and I would be the general who was ordering the armies around and looking for good locations and good ground to fight the battles with. And this preoccupied a great deal of my time, both when I was at home and when I was traveling. It was part of my fantasy life. It was part of the samskaras. It was part of the pattern that I brought with me. Perhaps if things had been different, I may have entered into a military kind of life, but I wasn't drawn to that ultimately. I was drawn to a different battlefield, a spiritual battleground, and the outer battleground was not to be my destiny, not this time around. But as these memories of different lifetimes have come forward, I have spent my time upon the outward battlegrounds. But there is also a part of me who resented the fact that life should be such a struggle, that there should be conflicts, that there should be wars, that there should be suffering. Why couldn't people get along? Why couldn't they work out their differences? As Master used to say, that fools argue and wise men discuss. What does that make Larry? He's not on there. I shouldn't make fun of you, Larry, when you're not here.
He's a foolish wise man.
He's a wise, yes. Sophomore. Wise fool, right? As Master used to say, that fools argue and wise men discuss. Why couldn't we discuss our problems and do it in a different way than what we had? And so I was of this mixed nature. Most of us are of that mixed nature. On the other hand, I had this very martial kind of outlook on life and my own fantasy life. And on the other hand, I wanted very much a life where peace reigned, where there weren't these conflicts, where there weren't these difficulties that we encounter in a lifetime. And I think that really is the battleground. You know, we have this higher calling, right? And we all feel the peace that we receive in meditation and those times of calmness, that serenity, whether it's in meditation or out on a walk or sitting by an ocean or in a warm bubble bath, wherever we find that. And yet we reach out for these other things of the world that don't bring us that.
And that's that mixed nature that we're always fighting. There's a point at which the scale tips, where instead of 20% of the time we're feeling drawn to the inward and the peaceful, we're over that 50% line. And when that tipping point happens, and we can be very close to it, and that's when the ego really rises up. You know, when we're at 49% is when it really starts, the ego really starts to say, hey, 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 hey. I don't know that I want that. I feel the power of that. I feel the intensity. I feel that I'll be swept away and I'll no longer exist. And so that's when that struggle really ensues, when we start to let God win. And so it's when it becomes noticeable and difficult that we're on that precipice. And so that's good news. You know, when we feel that actual battle, it's a good sign. Before that, we're kind of asleep. You know, we're kind of, we have it like it's a little vacation. We have it like a little treat. We dip into God here and there. We dip into that consciousness here and there. And we have a sense of it, but it's not really challenging this life that we're living, this ego-based life. And so there's not so much the battle, but as we get closer and closer to that place where God is really in charge, where we really opened ourselves up to that, then the battle, that's the battle of Kurukshetra. That's the battlefield. And so it's that choice point. And the choices come, like Swami Satchidananda told me, you can surrender now in this moment. And that's wonderful. But now you have to do it again in the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. Pretty soon, we don't have to. Pretty soon, you know, the trench is worn, and that's our path. We don't want anything else. We feel that freedom in having God in charge of everything, in being in that flow. And then it's easy. Then it's ingrained. It's who we are. But until then, we have to keep watchful. We have to keep cutting out the things that take us away. And it's not easy, but it's easy on the other side. But the ego doesn't believe that. It's been the Lord and Master for so many years, for so many lifetimes, that it doesn't trust until it can really feel the peace that comes from that. And that's why we come together like this, because you feel the peace in the room, and it helps the ego go, oh, that feels nice. That feels good. I could have more of that. You know, that's the beauty of these kinds of satsangs. It's easier when there's, you know, two or more gathered. God's there.
Do you think sometimes maybe it's necessary to just pull back from the world and go on your own so that you can establish that peace? I find it hard to establish a peace in this world.
Yeah, it's
just mingling in the world. Sometimes it's easy when I'm working,
yeah,
for example, but other times it can be stressful.
Yeah, it's, and I think it's Sri Yukteswar that said, meditate for a month a year. Take seclusion for a month a year. If you can't do a month a year, do a week a year. Can't do a week a year, do a day a week. If you can't do a day a week, do an hour a week. So he really encouraged us to find ways to take that seclusion. One thing that I've done in my lifetime is not actually being completely secluded, but going into silence. And that gives you a buffer in a way that that speaking can't. And so I took 3 months in silence at our house. Greg was still there. He was working, you know, 5 days a week. So I'd have about 10 hours a day where I was in seclusion. And then when he'd come home, I would cook dinner for us and we would eat together. And he loved it. I don't know if Greg's on here or not. He loved it. People said, oh, what did your husband do? Oh, he loved it. And then he'd go to work and he'd say, how can I get my wife to sign up for this? And when I go out in the world for a few things, you know, like I had to go get something or, and if somebody talked to me, I had a little notepad and I said, oh, I wrote on it and it just said, I'm unable to speak, but I can write my answers. They didn't know why I was unable to speak. And it was it's such an uplifting, it's difficult, it's challenging, and it allows you to have a state of freedom that's quite surprising. How much energy is, even if we don't talk much, how much energy is put into the idea of talking, the idea of responding, and then just the breath, how much breath goes into talking. And it's when we had teenagers at home, I would do, I think it was for about a year, every Monday I did silence. And the kids loved it too, because they would sit down and talk my ear off. and they loved it. So there was a peace that it brought me that I really, I would encourage everybody to try it. It's people don't have to know why you're not talking. Mm-hmm. You can just say, you know, like, oh, I'm having a laryngitis, or, you know, if you don't want to have to explain to people what it's about.
You did that in India too, right?
Yeah, in India I did several days silence. When Swami Satchidananda was still in the body. It must have been the first time I went to India. I decided to do silence. And Swamiji looked at me and said, only one day of Mona. It's called Mona in India. Only one day. You could take one day in silence, which I was really grateful that he had done that, because I only got to see him, I think, one or two more times. So it was nice to, before he left the body. So it was nice to not talk to him if there was something to be said. But yeah, I think the idea of seclusion, especially if you feel drawn to it, it won't, you can't just go, oh, I'm gonna go into seclusion and that'll get me somewhere. There has to be this kind of calling for it. And the 3 months of silence that I took, it was very interesting because I felt it wasn't a convenient time. I mean, I don't know that there's ever a convenient time to not talk for 3 months, but it wasn't a convenient time. It didn't quite make sense, but I felt very strongly that I was supposed to do it, and it ended up being the 3 months leading up to David having the stroke. Mm-hmm. So I came out of silence going to visit him and in Phoenix when he was in the hospital there. And so it was a necessary preparation for what was going to be on my plate. Yeah. So it's, when we're called to these things, it's for a reason. And it's subtle. It's not, God didn't come down in a blaze of light like in the Bible and say, it's just like, feels like I should go into silence. And the more we listen to those little whispers and follow them, the more we build up that intuition. So that's it's a fun thing to play with too. And my kind of analogy for it is almost like playing Simon Says. So God says, take this way when you're going this place, or make this for dinner. You know, you get just these little subtle ideas that come to you that you're not quite sure where they came from, and follow it and see what happens. Or don't follow it and see what happens. That's the other way to learn. The carrot or the stick. And as we build that intuition, that builds, that's John the Baptist. It comes before God realization, is building that intuition. And it's a fun, you can play with it like a game. You can play with, what does God want me to do now? And you can do it. I encourage people who aren't comfortable with using their intuition to do it on things that don't matter. So, you know, just simple things like, am I going to take a left turn or right turn to get to this place today? Am I going to make this kind of sandwich or this kind of sandwich? You know, just the silly little things. Am I going to do this chore before? Am I going to scrub the toilet first or am I going to put the dishes away first? And just open yourself to God giving you, being your supervisor. It's a nice way to bring God into our everyday and to improve our intuition, our opening. Okay, where were we? Oh, look at that. David's just about to talk about that. We look for a better way. As I sometimes say, it's been a pretty rough couple thousand years. We've gone through this Kali Yuga, we've gone through these times, and it's been a pretty rough time. Now, not for everybody and not all the time, but for many, many generations. For many individuals out of those generations, it's been a tough time, and we have absorbed that, whether through our own experience in previous lifetimes or because of what we've been handed down through the group consciousness of our families or our communities. So people look for a better way. They look for a higher way. They look for a way out of all this conflict, all this difficulty. And yet Master's writing here about how even from very birth, from very conception, that life is a struggle, life is a battle. Now, this isn't to say that we don't have high ideals, that we don't have a higher vision of what life could be or should be. But when we are insistent upon that our vision, when we're insisted upon that being our vision, and we constantly bump up against things that run contrary to that vision, then it disturbs us, it distresses us, and it creates a battle within ourselves. A realized soul has no fear. There was a saint one time, and they asked him, what is the biggest difference between having God realization and his state before that time? And he made a very simple statement. He says, I no longer have any fear. You know who that saint was?
No.
David. That's interesting that he talked about himself in third person there. Thule Baba asked him if he had any fear. And he said, since this point in my life, I have no fear. Well, the people who heard that were a little bit disappointed. They expected to hear some grand description of transformation of consciousness and of all kinds of mystical and magical things. It sounded a little bit pedestrian to them. I no longer have any fear. Until you realize that unless you are experiencing absolute equanimity and peace in your life, you're experiencing some kind of fear. So you're in good company. And fear leads to attachment. Attachment leads to anger. Anger leads to the dark side. No, that's not what David says here. Anger makes you lose all sense of proportion and any sense of divinity in your life when it comes about in this way. And when you lose that, you've lost God consciousness. So you see, this is the development of things. And to have no fear in life is really quite something. It is really quite something. When you have no fear in this life, you have complete equanimity and peace. When you have that kind of deep abiding peace, you're able to receive in the beginning that still small voice, that perfection of God that is within you. And as you develop within you, you're able to fully manifest the Christ consciousness. That sounds pretty good. The voice of intuition. In the beginning, it comes as John the Baptist, the voice of intuition, that still small voice. But then it comes, as Mother described it, a direct pipeline from God. And then a sudden transformation happens, in the sense that before you were controlled by events that are on the outside of you. If it is as if, it is as if the compass by which you get your bearings in life is determined by those people and events that are outside you. Now the compass is firmly encapsulated within you and it has determined your direction. It is determined by God, by that higher divine consciousness that is constantly flowing through you and out to the world from you. You are now existing in divine harmony, and from that divine harmony, you flow out into this world. Imagine when those of us in this room, on this call, can manifest that, what that would do in our world. To have everybody being God flowing through them at all times. That peace and harmony flowing through us. And when we think about, when we don't like what we see in the world, the only way to really change is that. Everything else is just band-aids, you know. But to feel that peace and harmony flowing out through us and to all those around us, that's our real goal. And that's how we can really help this world. Now, this world in its dualistic sense is always a battlefield, but you are no longer an internal battlefield. You are no longer divided by those forces as they come to you, as they come at you. You are one homogeneous self without division in that sense, without separation. And this is the kind of transformation that comes with God realization, and you are no longer afraid. I'm going to read this one last section. Called upon to do battle. We are all warriors. In this sense, we are all called upon to do battle. This is an interesting thought, isn't it? Some of us take that more easily than others. And even once we completely harmonize our whole inner selves through God realization, if we continue to live in this world, we still face differences. We still reside on a battlefield. We still have to confront wrong. And as in Jesus' case, we really took it on. He really took it on. He really took it on. Each person's life works out according to how God moves them to do it. But each one is upon a battlefield. There was a time in India when the Chinese were gathered up on the northern borders and they were threatening to invade. And there were two great saints at that time, Niam Karoli Baba and Nityananda, and they both said the Chinese will not invade. Well, all the indications were they were going to. They had taken Tibet, they had masked up, they were threatening to come in, and for some inexplicit reason, they withdrew from there, and they did not do the invasion. Those great masters were standing up. They were standing as light against that darkness. So there are many forms of battlefields, and there are many ways to do battle. But we're all called upon to do battle.
Sorry, this is John.
And when we let go of our attachments, that this world should be different than that. And this was a big shift in my own consciousness when I came to the point where God showed me in a way that really I could integrate it into my own consciousness. And I realized for how long I had been resenting and resisting the idea that the world should be a battlefield, that it should be easier, whether it was my spiritual path, whether it was a way to make money, whether it was a way to harmonize home life, whatever it was, that life should be easier than it is, that there shouldn't be these conflicts, that there shouldn't be these battles. I shouldn't have to step in and stretch myself in order to grow and bring myself more fully into this life. When I let go of that resentment, when I let go of that fear, then it cleared the way that I could act in this world. I could act with this passion. I could act in a way that could more fully express the light that is within me. So So you can imagine your own lives. You can see it there. You can see if there are areas where you hold back, areas where you retain fear, areas where you don't give your whole to this life, and begin to get rid of those things. Give them to God. Surrender them. Let them go. And see God on the positive side coming in and filling up what it is you're letting go. Get your ego out of the way and let God come in and fully manifest himself through you, through that higher intelligence, through that higher power, through that great love of God. So let's end with a meditation doing that exact thing that David's just challenged us to. He asks us, examine your own lives. You see there areas where you hold back, areas where you retain fear, areas where you don't give your whole to this life, and begin to rid yourself of those things. Give them to God, surrender them. So in this moment, allow God to bring to mind the area that's most needed to surrender to God. To surrender to the light. Talk to your ego as if it was a child that you love very much. Explain to it that God can do so much better with this situation than we can. The infinite creator knows all, sees all. And so by surrendering the situation, this piece that we're hanging on to God, challenging him to change us so that we can experience it in a different way. Bringing the light of God into that. And see the medulla opening as it did earlier. Filling that area with light. And again, it's okay to just use your imagination to do this, but feels unnatural. Just continue to hold it up to God. Give it to the universal light. It's very likely that the ego will hold it tight. Then thinking that only in controlling it is it safe. But allow it to just experiment just for this moment in surrendering it. It can take it back if it wants it back. Just for a moment or two to surrender it to God. Notice the lightness. Notice the expansiveness that comes with that. Let the ego see that. And just like you promised, let the ego take it back if it wants to. But know that there is no need. Make a note of this so that you can go back to it later. And bring it into your meditation and work with it there. Have our closing prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
I wonder
in the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the reason
of thy glorious presence,
in
every part of my being.
My
heart is bursting. With my love for thee. I kneel in adoration.
And
thy feet, and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every part of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the existence of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one. Blessed
Say hi to everybody.
Hariom.
Hariom.
Yeah, all over. Hi, Wendy.
Hi,
that's Judy. Dirk and Judy, John Durkin, Honor, Joshua, Peter, Lorraine, and Jordan, Bob,
and Travis.
Travis?
Oh, Travis and I are here. We listen to the service. Oh. Hey, Wendy. Hari Om.
That's Greg. And Jeff, who's Jeff Moore, who's in Illinois.
Hi.
Did Lorraine turn her camera on? Yep, there she is. And Travis.
We love you, Travis.
Hey, Travis.
Hariom, Travis.
Hariom, Wendy.
Hariom, Travis.
Hariom, Jill. Hariom, Hariom.
Hi, Travis.
Hariom, Greg.
Nice to see Travis.
Yeah. I'm afraid we can't share our potluck with you, though. Have a good day, everyone.
Good night. Hari Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om.